Hello, everyone. It's such a delight to see all of you here. Welcome. Thank you for being here. And I also want to thank myself for being here, because I got to tell you, it was quite a journey getting here. It was mostly about trust, and apparently I must have trusted, right? And so I want to share with you a little bit about how I got here. But before I do that, please give me a show of hands and tell me how many of you know about me. And it's okay if you know. Thank you. Now let's do it the other way around, because I think it's going to be even more hands. Please tell me how many of you know nothing about me. All right, welcome. Now I get to tell you all about myself. So let's start with my name. My name is Mira, and I found out that the name Mira is actually in Greek, it means destiny. I also have learned that my name is the name of a goddess in the Hindu religion. I also learned that there's a constellation out in the skies, the constellation Whale, and the brightest star. Of course, I had to be the brightest star, right? The brightest star, which is actually a dual star, is called Mira. And I myself am actually named after a baby doe. My mom was reading a fairy tale and the days before my birth, and there was the story of a baby deer that was so good and so loving that she fell in love with the name Dobro Mira. And so my name actually has two parts, Dobro, which means good, and Mira, which means world. So I think after this whole description, you will definitely know that my name is Mira, right? And I till this day, I believe my mom named me right, because I do see myself as a force of good in the world, right? So I want to tell you a little bit about how I came into this work. As John mentioned in his introduction of me, I was born in Bulgaria, and I grew up without any discussions about God, about angels, about religion in my life. There was really none of that. So as you can imagine, when the idea of reincarnation came into my life, I was really a blank slate. It was all an open possibility. Just as the idea of we don't reincarnate was a valid one in my mind, also was the idea of yes, we have many lifetimes. So when communism came down as a regime, all of a sudden there was a huge influx of spiritual information in Bulgaria, and there was this deep thirst for this kind of material and information. And so one day, I was at that time 13 years old, my uncle presented me with just simply one sentence. He said that he's reading a book on past life regression. And in that moment, as if there was that instant pull, you know, future pull, as if a part of you just jumps and is so clear and so aligned, I said to him, I need to read that book. I'm so curious. And I just couldn't wait to get my hands on it. And so when I started reading the book, I was really very intrigued. The book was by Brian Weiss. Do you guys know about him and his work? Yeah. So the book was by Brian Weiss, and in the book he was detailing stories of sessions he has done with his patients, with his clients. And it really amazed me how people would just experience something in their minds, you know, something just in their heads. And because of that experience, they will be able to let go of emotional issues they have been carrying with them throughout their whole life, or phobias or physical challenges will just get released in a matter of really just the amount of the short experience they're having. And I was so deeply moved and so deeply intrigued that by the end of the book, I wanted to know all about my own past lives, right? And here's what I did. On the back of the book, there was a script. So I decided to actually record it. And back then, it was tapes. So as you can imagine, I recorded on a tape. And as I was rewinding the tape so I can start playing it for myself, I very distinctly remember thinking to myself, "But Mira, there's nothing wrong with you. You don't have any phobias. There's physically nothing wrong with you. You're only 13. And yet, I was just so curious. So it was really curiosity that brought me into this work, into past life regression. And I relaxed. I was listening to my own voice guiding me. And all of a sudden, the script, the tape recording, asked me to look down at my feet and connect with another lifetime. And I was there. In an instant, I experienced myself as this other person, and I was right there. And it was all so vivid, so clear, and really felt rather extraordinary, because a moment ago, I was in a state of calm, and then all of a sudden, I was running down a hallway, and I experienced myself as this woman who, and I knew the story. And it was all so vivid, you know, so emotional. And because the experience was so vivid for me, I actually didn't even question. I didn't even need to go and research. I simply took it on face value. Here's the only research I did. That night when my mom came home from work, I told her what I have done. And bless her heart, she listened. She was very intrigued, you know, as she is still this day. And I asked her, "Well, Mom, have there been electric chairs in 1940? Because as that woman, I experienced myself as a doctor who was living undercover as a Russian spy. And my cover was a doctor during the time of World War II. And I had received orders to actually kill a Nazi general who I was supposedly treating for an illness. And it was a very emotional moment for me to decide what to do about that, you know. And anyway, I had proceeded with doing what I did, thinking that I'm doing this for the common good, right? For the common purpose of fighting a war. And so I actually saw myself being electrocuted. And it was so interesting how I didn't experience any of the emotions, anything of any of the torture. I simply saw myself from above and how my spirit beautifully lifted from my body. So in fact, it was such a gentle and loving experience for me. And I have to tell you, there was the lesson that came with that experience, to be loving, to be kind, to be a force of good in this world. So that even more deeply reinforced my awareness of why am I here. And so when my mom came home that night, I told her what I had experienced. And the only question I had for her was, were there electric chairs around the time of World War II? Because, you know, when you're 13, the times of the 40s seems like the times of antiquity, right? You can imagine. And so she said yes, and that's all it took. That's all the confirmation I needed. And it was only years later that I was telling the story to a friend, and she said, "Well, have you done any research? Have you tried learning about this?" And I was like, "You know what? It never occurred to me." And so I actually decided to look up as much as I could. And of course, how do you find a Russian spy who was killed as an undercover doc? You know, all I was able to find was that, yes, indeed, there were electric chairs during the time of World War II. And I have to tell you, it was such an impactful experience that, in a way, that was enough for that moment. It gave me what it needed to give me. It impacted my life in the way I saw myself. But I have to tell you, as a 13-year-old, other things are more important in the world. Things like music and like boys, right? And also figuring out the rest of your life. And so I kept on going with my schooling, and I eventually was here living in New York City here in America. And I was practicing as a corporate attorney in a very large law firm in New York City. And For about a year, I had suffered with a very debilitating physical condition that developed as a result of the simplest dental procedure being done. I just needed a new filling. That's all there was to it. But because of the work that my dentist did, as a result of it, I developed a very painful TMJ condition. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's simply an inflammation of the muscles of the jaw, around the jaw. It has nothing to do with the structure of the jaw. It's simply the muscles. For a whole year, I tried to heal as the very standard medical route suggested to me by my dentist. And I have to tell you, it was really, really very painful, just so you get an idea. Not only did I change my dentist, right, but I also had to change my diet because I couldn't even open my mouth to put a spoonful of food in my mouth. I had to change my bed, my pillow. Oh, the expenses I went through, you know, you can imagine. And so I was seeing my dentist every week, and I was seeing a physical therapist 3 times a week. So you can imagine this was very draining on me emotionally, physically, but also financially. And so eventually, after a whole year of this, one day my dentist sat me down and he said to me, "Mira, we need to be realistic." That's the word he used. He said, "Realistic, okay?" And he said to me, "We have tried everything we could try. This is not working. So you have 2 options now. You either got to learn to live with the pain." Can you imagine chronic pain for the rest of your life? I mean, even when you have the slightest cut, you know it's there. Your attention is focused on it. Now imagine something that's always right in your face and so debilitating. And he said to me, the other option he gave me was to have an operation. And he told me that the operation involved actually breaking my jaw. Can you imagine this? Breaking my jaw. And as I told you, my condition had nothing to do with my jaw. It was the muscles of the jaw. So I was thinking, why would you break something to fix something else? You know, it didn't even make sense, right? And so I walked out of there, out of his office, in a state of complete desperation. And as synchronicities always go about, I have to tell you, I had scheduled my appointment with my physical therapist right after. And they were a kitty corner one from each other, the 2 offices away from each other. So I was crossing the street, going in this morose state of mind. And as I walked into the physical therapist's office, the owner of the office was sitting behind the desk. And he greeted me and he sounded so cheerful. And he was telling me that him and his wife were going to Hawaii the following morning. And he was just so looking forward to this. And I stood there, I looked at him and I thought to myself, this is not right. I went from sad to mad in a matter of seconds because, you know, here I am. I'm still struggling. And all the money I have given you, it hasn't even helped me. And now I'm facing a lifetime of pain or an operation. And you're using my money to go to Hawaii. And I've never been to Hawaii. And I've always wanted to go. This is not right, right? You can imagine how I felt. So in that moment, I knew that something else had to happen, right? I needed another solution. And so as I was lying on the table, on the massage therapist table, and they were working on my face, all of a sudden, I remembered the regression I did as a little girl. And I said to myself, you know what? I've got nothing to lose. Why not give this a try? So I very quickly found a practitioner in New York City. And during my first session with her, because I was so anxious for this to work, I wanted this to really give me the impact I have read that is possible for other people, I didn't experience anything. But again, you know, not knowing where else to go, I went again for a second session to this person. And during my second experience with this lady, I saw the briefest visual of a chain right around my neck. And I experienced myself as this very tall, very strong slave. I experienced myself as this very physically strong slave who was very broken in his spirit. So there was this big metal collar, very heavy iron collar, and it was, when it was put together, there was an imperfection in the welding of it, and it was always rubbing right where the main pain spot was in my face. And I saw the metal cufflinks around my wrists and around my ankles and a big chain connecting them all. And I had a very vague awareness of my master somewhere in the distance, you know, not even much of anything beyond that. But there was emotions, there was knowingness. And it was just so sad, you know? And I have heard about the Stockholm Syndrome before, you know, where women fall in love with their abductors. And I never understood, how is this possible, right? For somebody to do you so much evil and hurt you so much, and yet for women to go falling in love with these men. And yet I gotta tell you, I totally experienced what that felt like in that moment as that slave, because I felt so grateful to my owners for even feeding me. Can you imagine how broken my spirit must have been? And so I experienced just that little scene with a lot of emotions. So I left that office and I pretty much cried for the rest of the day, right? And I thought about power and powerlessness and what does it really mean to be powerful? Because there I was physically strong but emotionally broken. And why didn't I run away? Why didn't I do something? All those things. I didn't come to any conclusions, as you can imagine, right? I didn't have any huge revelations, nothing. But here's the extraordinary part of this story. The next morning, I woke up and the pain was completely gone, completely gone. And I went back to my dentist. And back then, I didn't feel comfortable talking about my spirituality, all right? I felt very much like a spirit undercover. You can imagine that. And so I didn't tell him what I did. I just told him, the pain is gone. And he looked at me. He said, wow, that's a miracle. And we left it at that. And from there on, what happened is I knew this was working as a modality, right? So at first I wanted to tell everybody. And at first that was my sister, my mother, and my very close circle of friends. And I wanted to read every book I could and go to as many workshops as I could. But at first it was not even that much because, as you can imagine, I was working 80-hour weeks and when there was not even time for much of anything. So eventually, I became more and more interested and I wanted to share this work with others and I started offering this work to others. And one day, I had the opportunity to work with Wayne Dyer and from there on, my life drastically changed. But I have to tell you, that story took about took place seven or eight years ago. And since then, the pain hasn't returned, even though I have been telling this story many times. And here's something interesting that happened. A few months ago, I went for another routine checkup with my dentist. And as I was sitting on the dental chair, he was looking at my chart. And he said to me, and how's your jaw? You know, just casually, randomly. And I said to him, my jaw? what about my jaw? Why are we talking about my jaw? And then I was like, oh, my jaw. Okay. And I said to him, okay, now I gotta tell you what happened. And I told him the story. And I never felt comfortable sharing with him before because I just didn't know how he was going to react, right? But this time I was gonna tell him the story like it was. And he looked at me and he said to me, we gotta talk. And it turned out that he has been using hypnosis with other clients of his who have been afraid of the drilling sounds and so on. And it turned out that he himself was actually thinking of opening a TMJ clinic because I have been the hardest case he had ever seen. Okay, that tells you something right there. And I gotta tell you, this man was is considered one of the best dentists in America, and also he's on the faculty of Columbia University Dental School. So if he says I was a tough case, I trust him, okay? So he said that because of me, he had purchased all that equipment trying to figure out how to treat me, and he had done all this extra study and specializing that he decided to channel into opening a TMJ clinic. So he offered that I work with him with people who would be interested in alternative ways of healing TMJ conditions. So for me, this very much felt like a completion of a circle, right? And so this is how I came into this work. And as you can understand, after having my own personal experience, it took a few years to get me going because I did not see how it was possible for me to move from being a lawyer to being a past life regressionist. But it turns out there is a way, right? It's not just a degree of change. It was a huge change. And I want to tell you now about meeting with Wayne Dyer because that was really the pivotal moment for me. And when I met with Wayne, it was very much a synchronous story, one of those extraordinary things that happened that if I want to replicate, if I want to give somebody a prescription of how to connect with Wayne Dyer and have Wayne Dyer work with them and write the foreword to their book, I would never be able to do this, right? So I tell the full story in Beyond Past Lives, and it's such a juicy, such an extraordinary story, but I'll leave some of the mystery of that for you until you flip open the book. And so after a few months of him and I talking back and forth and deciding what to do, I flew out to Maui to meet with him. And on my way to Maui, I had this strange feeling that I was going to do two sessions, not just a session with him, but somebody else as well. And I did turn out to be right. So my session with Wayne Dyer was really very meaningful and very impactful for him. It gave him so much confirmation for the validity of his commitment to his work. It helped him understand his path, his soul development. It helped him understand even deeper his own essence as a person. And so he was really very moved, very profoundly moved by his experience. And so he immediately wanted to start sharing the story with other people. So the very first person he spoke with was his daughter, Serena Dyer, who was visiting at that time. And Serena, sure enough, she wanted to have a regression right away too. And so she and I had a really very beautiful and very powerful regression, and I want to tell you the story of it. So Serena experience herself as a keeper of a dimension. So she didn't go to a past life, she didn't go to a future life, she altogether went to another dimension. And she experienced herself as the guardian, as the guide of this plane. And this was a plane where souls will come on their way to being born on Earth. And in a way, they will get their colors, they'll get their personalities for their incarnation on Earth. And Serena, oh, there were so many extraordinary details to this, but one of the details she mentioned was that there's three doors, and one of the doors through which, in a way, doorways through which souls will come through was the doorway for newly developed and newly created souls. And I was so intrigued when I heard that, and I said, newly created souls, wow, can we go backwards? You know, can we go to where new souls are created? I gotta tell you as a side note, sometimes when I do regressions, I feel like Indiana Jones, honestly. I am on the edge of consciousness, on the cusp of developing new understanding. It's just so extraordinary, the things I hear. And so Serena had no problem with that because, you know, when you are in this deep state of relaxation, there's no limitations to the mind. All directions of space and time are open for exploration. So sure enough, she went up a tunnel of light, and she described to me that souls are created by the combination of light and energies. And I was so intrigued by that. And I said to her, well, for one, I was thinking to myself, I thought all souls have been already created. You know, how is it possible the new souls are being created now? But I asked her, well, where is this awareness that a new soul is needed coming from? And she described to me, she said to me that all that is knows that within itself there's an expression missing. There's an aspect of it that it needs to be expressed out into the world. So in a way, all that is knows that it's not all that is. And so that it makes sense to me, she said, it's very much like the human body. When you need salt for the proper chemical functioning of the body, a signal gets sent and you crave something savory, you satisfy the craving, then the chemical balance is brought back into the body and you go about your day, not even realizing that such an important chemical balancing took place. So she said to me, it's very much the same with creation. All that is feels that there's something missing within it. It feels this need for a specific expression, for a specific way of knowing itself into the world. So I heard this, and honestly, I was blown away by the implications of this, because I realized that for us to be created out of this need, that means that each one of us is already very deeply loved and needed even before we were created. Do you feel how important that is? That means that you can no longer go about your life and say, oh, poor me. Yeah, I've got no worth, no validity. God created me from spare parts, you know. He was just thinking, oh, let's throw this one together. Because even before you were created, you were needed. Your validity was known. You were so desired. You were already seen as that perfect piece that will fill in what is missing. And so I was thinking, gosh, how silly of us to invalidate ourselves and to go about life denying our worth, denying our validity, while all along, even before we were created, our worth and validity was known. And you know, God in its, of course, you can replace here God with the universe or whatever word you want to use, source. I'm just going to use God. So God in its infinite love for us has created us with this free will so that we can actually go and express, go and create, so that the divine can know itself in ever more expanding ways through us, through our choices. But because of this free will that we have, we can actually deny our worth and our validity. And yet, the love that the divine has for us is so unconditional that that God is staying by our side and saying, you know what? I love you so much. I love you without any conditions that I will even allow you to deny your worth and invalidate yourselves. And, you know, that's unconditional love right there, because I'm not saying I'm going to love you only if you recognize how worthy you are, right? And so, of course, God is standing by our side, and in its infinite, the divine, and in its infinite wisdom and support of us is always giving us what we need. Even if we choose to self-invalidate, the universe will give us all the experiences we need to actually have this experience of, yeah, I'm not worthy, poor me, you know, it's just me, what else do I have to offer, and it's just me. And yet, of course, the divine is standing by our side and is saying, I know that sooner or later, you're going to change your mind, you're going to start seeing your worth, your validity, your lovability, that it's always been there all along. And of course, the moment you change your mind, I'm always here. I'm right by your side, and I'm going to rush in and give you everything that you need so that you can have this experience of actually knowing that you're worthy and valuable, and you have so much to offer to the world. Because, you know, each one of us comes with all these gifts, with all these abilities, and we're very much like a piece of a puzzle. We fit, we belong, just as long as we trust that we fit and belong and we have something to offer. But if we try to contort ourselves in shapes that are not us, you know, because of beliefs that don't even belong to us, or because we're trying to please others, it seems that the world is not there to meet us, but it's really because we're in this funny shape and we don't fit into the big puzzle that we are supposed to fit in, right? So I want to encourage you to, if anything you take away from tonight, I want to encourage you to really take this knowing of how loved you are, of how loved you are in the eyes of the divine, how treasured you are. Because, you know, God doesn't do pointless things. You were created because you are needed. And everything you have to offer is very much needed and desired. And so, I think this is really one of the most profound stories with this experience that Serena offered me that I have encountered in my regression work. Of course, I have to tell you, every regression is very unique, very different, extraordinary every time. Yet, this is a story that I feel I need to keep on telling everybody so that, you know, not that you don't know you're worthy, not that you haven't heard this before, but you know, one day you're going to really change your mind and you fully are going to step into that love and exuberant treasuring, exuberant valuation and value that the divine sees of you. And you're going to start claiming it. And I hope that for some of you that is tonight and you're really going to claim it. And for others, it might be, you know, tomorrow. But that's all right. Whenever you change your mind and whenever you start claiming your worthiness, the divine is going to be right there to rush in and to support you. And I wanted us to do a meditation. that is around this idea of love and allowing love and allowing yourself to experience love. But before we go into this, I want to ask you and give you the opportunity to ask questions, to ask me anything about what I shared or anything that you have as a question. John, I think this lady is ready to start for us.
What about, you said there was like three different souls, so you,
yeah.
What were the other two?
Thank you for listening. one was for souls of spirit guides, and the other one was just simply souls that have had other incarnations. And so that's what she described, yeah.
Do you use hypnotism in your regressions?
I do. And this is a question that I get often asked. People ask me, you know, I've seen stage hypnosis, and that's scary, okay? And so people think that somehow I'm going to snap my fingers and they're going to start doing some silly things. And it doesn't work that way. Hypnosis is really self-hypnosis. All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. It's simply the knowing of the mind that the body is safe, that you're in a place where you're comfortable, you're safe. So the mind can really tune within. And in fact, there have been studies done showing that within less than 2 minutes, more like 40 seconds of you watching TV, you're already hypnotized. Can you imagine? Of course, if I were to come into the room and say to you, so are you hypnotized? You'll be like, oh, of course not. What are you talking about? Yet, it's really the knowing that you're safe and the mind, the brain simply switches in different wavelength activities of the brain. So it's simply the ability to relax and tune within. So the hypnosis that I use feels so natural, so easy to people. And I promise you, throughout the entire time when you do regression, be it personally with me, because I also do personal sessions, be it in a workshop like we're going to do on Saturday, or be it with my CD, with a recording, a guided regression, I promise you, you will be fully in control throughout the entire time. And you will be comfortable, conscious, and aware. But at the same time, there will be experiences flowing through your mind. Yeah.
Thank you for your talk.
Thank you.
Could you? I watched your little program with Wayne Dwyer.
Sure.
On your website.
Yeah, thank you.
Could you speak to the idea that there really is no past, all time is going on now, and it's not past lives that we're going into, but that we're just recognizing aspects of ourselves?
I love that you're asking this question. In fact, this is one of the things that I wanted to share with you guys. So you gave me the perfect opportunity. So just like everybody else, just like we have heard about incarnation and just the way it is presented to us through the Hindu tradition, up until I had my own personal experience about lives being simultaneous, I did believe that time flows as a linear sequence. And I did believe up until that point that there is one soul, and the same soul goes from one life to another. Hopefully, you know, you've learned something in another life, in a past life, and hopefully you're bringing that wisdom in your next life, and hopefully you wouldn't accumulate too much karma, right? So that next time around, it's easier. And so the very, very, very first client I had outside of my circle of family and friends was a man named John. And now I look back, and honestly, I'm amazed at what happened to me during that session. Because I gotta tell you, my title was an attorney. I was not even telling people that I'm a regressionist. I was not even telling many people that I do regression, okay? So John experienced a lifetime where he saw himself as a man. We joined him in that life in the 1930s. And in that lifetime, he was very detailed with dates and places and names. It was just so clear. He would read a gravestone engravings for me. It was just very vivid and very clear for him. And so in that lifetime, he died in the 70s. He committed suicide. And so he committed suicide. And as his spirit lifted from his body, he went to the spirit side and he met with his spirit guide. And the two of them, you know, talked about him not completing the lessons he was looking to complete, putting a short end to everything. And of course, he was told, you have the ability to create another lifetime and go learn and experience. You have all of eternity, no rush, but you know, he wanted to do it fast. So he described to me, so the next thing he said is, so keep in mind, in that lifetime, he died in the 70s, okay? And the next thing he said to me was, oh, I'm with these people. It's the summer of 1950. And he said that, and I was like, oh, this is exactly what I did. I was like, oh. And I tried to hold my breath, and I tried to sink back in the chair because somehow, listen to this, this is so funny. Somehow in my mind, I thought that if he hears me breathing, he'll actually recognize that there's a huge discrepancy going on. You cannot die in one life in 1970 and in the next one be born in 1950. That's not how reincarnation works, right? So that's why I disappeared in my chair and I was like, oh my God, this is strange. And I honestly held my breath for what felt like an eternity, and I didn't know what to do. I was just paralyzed. I didn't even know what to say. So I just decided to let him speak. And good thing he spoke so I can start breathing again. And so he kept on going as if nothing extraordinary was going on. And he told me about this life. And in his second life, listen to this, he dies in 2020, okay? So there's a version of him presently being alive alongside his current life. And once we were done with the second life, again, he lifted from the body, went to the spirit side, and met with his spirit guide. And again, there was a discussion of what next. So he experienced six lifetimes, and all six of them were in the same 130-year period. And because he was talking, every time I would just note, oh my God, he just got born during the Vietnam War. Oh my God. You know, I would just note all these things. But I was so grateful that he was talking that I was not going to interrupt the process, right? And so as I will do with you guys when you come on Saturday for our workshop, when I guide people during their past lives, I always make sure that once we experience as many lives as possible, I connect them with their higher self so we can answer questions to what they have in the present moment. So as you can imagine, I was so eager to ask, what happened? What just happened? And I was given the very simple answer that time does not really exist outside of this dimension, that we use time so that we can create experiences here on Earth, but outside of this human body, outside of this incarnation, there's really no time. So I was amazed. And it's not that I really understood it, but somehow I did understand it. You know, it's one of those things that you feel and you intuitively know. But it did take quite a lot of time for it to deeply sink into my mind and to make sense. And it's as if Spirit was looking to teach me a lesson on this because, you know, all of a sudden, all these other clients started showing up, and they would also have regressions where they will have lifetimes overlapping one with another. And It was really extraordinary to me, because here's what I developed as an understanding. I realized that if you were to think of an oversoul, so think of a soul and think of it as the mothership, okay? And now imagine this oversoul taking pieces and creating pieces of itself and saying, you know, I want to learn about love. Okay? And so how do you learn about love? You don't learn about love only in being in a very loving, kind relationship, right? That's wonderful, but that's just only one point of view. You also learn about love through jealousy. You also learn about love by being abandoned as a child in an orphanage. You learn about love by cheating, by other people cheating on you. You learn about love by giving birth to a child and experience what that feels like. You can imagine all these different ways to learn about love. So a soul says, okay, I'm going to learn about this issue, but I am going to create all these different lifetimes. And so a soul will take pieces of itself, and I have been clearly told that these pieces of the soul are whole and complete. So think of it as yourself, right? That's that piece of the oversoul is who you are, whole and complete into itself, even though it's a piece of a bigger energy. And so sometimes the soul will say, you know what, I'm really going to create a very long span in for my lifetimes to learn this lesson. So during a regression, it will seem that the person have created a lifetime in ancient Egypt. Then they'll create a lifetime at the time of Jesus. Then during the time of the Middle Ages. Then during the Industrial Revolution. Then during the Civil War in America. And the present day, or going into the future. So when a person does a regression, oh, it's such a beautifully stacked, neat progression, right? It's like I learned and then I learned and in my past life, right? But sometimes a soul, like with John, the lifetimes I told you about that he had, a soul will take a 130-year period and will say, the economic conditions are perfect. Everything is ideal because I will be able to create all these lifetimes and I'll be able to learn. So I'm going to stack all my lifetimes in the same 130-year period. And that's when, you know, a regressionist like me will hear this and say, what happened, right? This doesn't fit into what others understand as a reincarnation. And so you can think of these lives very much like, say, parallel roads one to each other. Or if you were to think of a skyscraper, on each floor there's life, right? But you're not thinking about it. You know it's there, but you're not connecting with it. So it's very much the same way with our lives. And now I'm gonna say something that might not make sense to some of you. This implies that all your lives, past, present, and future, are currently unfolding. So if time is simultaneous, right? So what we usually think of past lives being done and over with and completely complete, right? For those of you who have experienced other lifetimes and know the stories of those past lives, I'm here to tell you that you have experienced only one version of that life, because in any moment, a new possibility can be born, a new possibility can flower, even in the past, what we consider the past. And so if you have experienced lifetimes where there has been trauma, where there has been sad things going on, rather than say, oh, poor me, you know, poor me, that's such a good excuse for how miserable I am right now. You know, please don't do that, right? Don't use your past lives as an excuse for how messed up your present life is, okay? In instead, look at them and say, this is a part of me that is learning the same lesson. They're simply doing it from a different point of view. And I am learning from what they're learning. I don't need to repeat the way they're doing it, but I can also empower them. I can also send them love in my meditations. I can connect with them and give them that piece of wisdom, that opportunity, that empowerment, whatever gift they need to come through for them. Because, you know, I bet you all of you have had those experiences where you're really down and it doesn't seem like life is going your way. You know, the life is not coming through the way you would love to. And then one morning you wake up and you feel better, right? You feel like you're ready to shake off whatever was holding you down, and you feel lighter about yourself. And I am here to tell you, you don't know if that was another lifetime talking to you, you know? It could have been your guides, it could have been your higher self, it could have been a beautiful divine intervention, or another lifetime coming through for you and telling you, you don't have to suffer, there is another way, be strong, you can do this. And also, the implication of what you are saying is that as John presented this idea to me, there's also the possibility that these other pieces of your soul that you're learning simultaneous with, maybe they're your lover. Maybe they're a friend that is also on the same path. Maybe they are an enemy, right? Maybe there's somebody altogether in Brazil, let's say, and you'll never meet them. Or maybe they're a stranger you encounter on the street, and for just that split second, you look into each other's eyes and you say, there's something there, you know, something happened. I saw somebody, right? So, I got to tell you, there's no strangers on earth, right? So that was a very long answer to your question, but I'm delighted that you gave me the opportunity to share with you on this. Yeah. Anybody else?
Just a fascinating talk, of course, but on the just the technical side, I don't know why I'm even thinking of the technical side. What has been the arc of your journey from, you know, your first revelation after the TMJ,
yeah.
And then is most of this intuited, or were you a quick study of a lot of things? Because it seems like this is, you know, several lifetimes worth of intuition and understanding that you yeah. have. But how did you get from there to here, and how long was that path?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking this. So since my regression and healing, my TMJ, it took me about 6 years to actually trust this, right? It was a slow coming because I had these fears that healers don't make any money, right? I didn't believe that anything can match the extraordinary salary I was making at the top of my game as an attorney in New York City. And so I was definitely knowing that my heart is not in it, right? I knew that there's something else for me to do, and I knew that it's my path and my joy to serve people and connect with people, but I just didn't believe it possible to actually do this work, right? And so I realized that there was a time when I was actually having an argument with God, okay? This is what I was doing with my hands on my hips. I was like, all right, show me a wait list of a year, and then I'm going to trust, right? And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, how am I even going to be able to see these clients when I'm even working most weekends, right? But give me a wait list of a year, guarantee me clients, and then I'm going to trust. Or let me win the lottery, right? And then I'm going to trust. Show me the money in my bank account. And then I realized, gosh, it's about my beliefs. I really got to look within and study my beliefs about money and what I think is possible. And then I'm going to see it in the world. So I did work through my beliefs and focus on that. So when I actually flew out to meet with Wayne Dyer, I flew out an attorney. And I came back a past life regressionist in a matter of a week. Because, you know, I had this feeling of, Wayne Dyer believed in me. Miro, when are you going to start believing in yourself, you know? And so I knew it's now or never. And after this experience, because I had already worked with my beliefs, It didn't matter there were no clients. You know, it didn't matter that there was no sense of security, because I had found a comfort in the uncomfortable. And so, not knowing what to do with myself, right, because I had all this time on my hands, I said, I'm going to write about this session with John. I knew it was such a profound thing that I had to start sharing. And at first, I was not even feeling comfortable saying that I'm writing a book, okay? I was writing part one, okay, part one. I was not even daring call it a chapter. And it took me about 2 years to actually write the book and another year to edit it. So, and there were times when I would get so upset in myself. Why is this taking so much time, you know? Because literally the writing time was no more than 2 or 3 months put all together. But as a time, it took so many years. It felt like really so many years. And yet now I look back and I realize that I had to become the person who can stand here in front of you and be able to tell you, yeah, I'm creating a revolution in past life regression. It is really simultaneous life, right? And so that's how it took started. And also, because the session with John brought me such a novel understanding, novel awareness, I was also supported by all these other sessions to answer your question that will come and give me different bits and pieces. And also, I found great awareness and knowledge and the ability to piece it all together and see the bigger picture by studying Jane Roberts and the Seth materials. I imagine some of you are familiar with the Seth materials, right? So it served as a sounding board. It served as, oh, okay, so I'm not going crazy, right? There's somebody else who's talking about this. And so that's how it came about. I want to honor you raising your hand, and then we're going to go into our meditation. So please go ahead with your question.
Thank you. I wanted to ask if when you're talking to somebody and they're in a regression, they are talking. The person's talking.
Yeah, yes.
So how can an intuitive or a medium, how can they tell you that they see your past life?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why there's two ways to pull it.
Yeah. So I have to tell you, I'm not a medium. So when I don't know your past lives, right? What happens to me sometimes is during a regression, as I hypnotize the person, I also hypnotize myself. And sometimes I do experience what they experience. It's really interesting when in my mind's eye, I'm like, oh, there goes the client. I see them walking and they're describing to me what they're experiencing. But I really love the validity of this work coming through in people able for themselves to know other lifetimes. In other words, for themselves to feel what it felt like. Because when you go to a medium, they might be able to read your energy. They might be able to connect with the stories of other lifetimes your soul has created. But it's, you know, it carries a different weight to it. Sometimes it's emotional. Sometimes it's more of like, okay, that's interesting. But, you know, okay, I can see how it connects. But it's not the deep, profound experience, the deep shifting, the deep soul, you know, like the tectonic plates readjusting inside you. And so that's what I really love about regression, that it allows for, now I get it. I felt it for myself, and that awareness and that experience is mine, and now I'm ready to change. And that's really the beauty of past life regression. It gives you the bigger picture, the bigger understanding, and then you come out of it saying, I'm a different person. I'm going to do differently. I'm going to claim differently. I'm going to make different choices. It's really very empowering as a process. And so let's now go into our meditation. I would love for us to complete our time together with a meditation. So make yourselves comfortable. I'm going to start the music here. Oh, and thank you for the lights. And close your eyes and allow yourselves to begin to relax. You know the way within. So allow yourself to close your eyes and take a deep, slow, and gentle breath in. And then slowly breathe out. You're ready to feel worthy of love and to allow love. You're ready to allow this change within you. Become aware of the space around your body. Sense the energy of all that is around you. And take a deep, slow, and gentle breath in. And breathe out. Become aware of the sensations of your body. Feel the tingling relaxation in your toes, in your calves, in your legs, and feel the sensations of your body. As your fingers, arms, and shoulders relax. And feel the sensation of your jaw, your scalp, and the muscles of your face. Of your chest now. And as you breathe in, your chest expands and relaxation washes over you. And take a deep, slow, gentle breath in. And now become aware of the space inside your chest. Become aware of the space inside your body. Listen. Feel, experience, and become aware of your core now. Become aware of your essence. And feel the tone of your being. Feel your unique vibration. Feel the essence of your being. And become aware of the deep rhythms within you. This is who you are. This is who you are, apart from the personality you have taken on, apart from the expectations of the world, apart from your beliefs about yourself. You are returning to yourself. You are returning to the truth of yourself. You are returning to your origin. And you remember the unconditional love you as a soul originate from. Before you were created, there was a void, and Source created you as a unique vibration to satisfy that need. Your worth, your value was known before you even came into existence. Your birth was celebrated throughout all of creation. And you were given freedom in flight to create, to experience, to know, so that through you, all that is can know more of itself. Feel the unconditional love that created you. It is within you. It is the very nature of your being. Feel the love within you. You are loved. You know, you feel, and you deeply trust and deeply believe that you are loved. You're worthy. You feel and you trust that you are worthy. You deserve. You know. You feel and you trust that you deserve all of it. You are firmly rooted in the belief of how loved you are. You feel safely held in the love that all that is has for you. You know you don't have to do anything to deserve this love. You don't have to take any actions. You don't have to prove anything. Your worth and your value has already been determined before you were even created. There is no person or an event that can bestow your worth or your value on you. There's no person or an event that can affirm for you that you are lovable. Your worth and your value was affirmed for you in the moment Source blessed you with your existence. You are lovable. There is no need to wait any longer to accept your value, to accept that you are loved by all of creation. All of creation has given you permission to trust and to know and to act on the fact that you are loved. Now it is your turn. Now give yourself permission to know that you're loved and that you're worthy of love. By going to your core, by remembering your essence as love, you are erasing and releasing thoughts and beliefs that do not belong to you. The warmth of the unconditional love inside you spreads all over you. All over your body and your mind. And the strength and the intensity of this love empower you. You are the voice. You are the authority. So now powerfully declare that you are loved. You declare that you are worthy of love. You declare that you allow love. And now you accept that you are loved. You accept your truth. You accept your identity. And now the world is reflecting back at you the love inside you. It is safe to feel loved. It is safe to allow love. And you are surrounded by love and support. In your relationships, you feel loved. You allow yourself to be loved. You allow yourself to be supported. You allow Source to love and support you by giving you what you need when you need it. You're loved. And you allow the world to confirm that you are worthy, that you deserve. Love within you. Love around you. Love embraces you. You find safety in love. You release the need to control. You release the need to pursue love. you release the need to run away from love. You release the need to deserve love. You simply allow it. You allow yourself to be taken care of, to be supported, to be nurtured as the most beloved child of the universe that you are. In a moment, when you open your eyes, things may seem to be the same on the surface, but you will know that everything has changed because you have changed. You have allowed love. You have allowed yourself to know that you are loved. And all you have to do is act as the person you have become. Think and act knowing that you are loved. Think and act in ways that allow others to love you and support you. For you are loved. And so it is. I love you, and I thank you for loving me. And now, become aware of your body. Let's return back to the present moment. Return back to the room. Wiggle your toes, wiggle your fingers. Stretch your body a little. Stretch yourself in the chair a little. To the present moment, and when you're ready, open your eyes. And I'm going to ask for the person who dimmed the lights to help us and turn them back on. Thank you.